This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. I'm pretty sure for all of us here and for all of you listening at home or wherever you're catching this episode, a lot has happened in the last 272 days. I'm therefore certain a lot will have changed in the last 476 days, and I can't even begin to comprehend what's gone on during the previous 5,054 days. But some of you who may not be knowing what those numbers mean may need a bit of educating. Before Saturday, it was 272 days since we last claimed 3 points on the road. It was 476 days since we last picked up a win in a game that kicked off at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. And finally, and more eye-wateringly, 5,054 days have passed since we last won away from home in the Championship. Since Fozzie came into the football club, however, the signs have been there that this win wasn't too far away, with improvements coming every time that the side stepped onto the grass. As the Greens headed over the Severn Bridge to take on Swansea City, there was only one objective: win. And let's be real, Martin Scorsese and Steven Seagal would have been proud of the script that unfolded in South Wales. Former Swan and now forever an Argyle hero, the bargain of the century, Morgan Whittaker, popped up in the 18th minute with a decisive strike following an excellent corner kick routine. No, that wasn't a mistake. This isn't a drill. We scored from a corner. Away win, clean sheet, back-to-back wins in the Championship. It's now at this point that I'm already drawing theories that Fozzie may well be the second coming. I'm Joe and I'm in the hot seat for one more dance, similar to Neil Warnock. I just can't walk away. And joining me this evening, as ever, is the wonderfully sober Sam Down, who finally managed to find a seat to enjoy a few hours. How are you, Sam?
Absolutely dreadful, but I had fun yesterday, so that's okay. That's the price I pay.
Excellent. Showing us his curtains this evening instead of mine getting an airing. Ben, are you well?
I am infinitely better than at least 50% of this podcast right now. So yeah, I might be doing more speaking than normal, given the comments that we got from you and Sam pre-record. But yeah, I'm sure if the listeners haven't turned off at that suggestion, then we'll look forward to the rest of the show with great relish. So much, as you said, so many firsts that have happened with that game that we haven't had for so long.
Yeah, I'm hoping that my voice lasts this recording. One or two drinks were consumed to celebrate such a momentous win last night. And last but not least, rejoining the pod for a flying visit is Adam, who was in South Wales. Adam, did you enjoy your day in Welsh Wales?
Tell you what, I certainly did. Yeah, and I imagine that I spent it just a little bit more sober than, well, at least Sam did. So, yeah, hopefully one or two of the memories have stuck in my brain for this one, and I'll be able to share some of the talking loads. Hard to say anything.
You sure about that sobriety?
Well, you know what? Yeah,
it's my own life right now.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Why don't we tap into some of those memories straight away, Adam? Why don't you take us through that momentous first away win of the season away at Swansea yesterday?
I mean, it's very much an understatement to say that it's been a long time coming. The north of 5,000 days since we last had this feeling, and well, certainly the first away win in the Championship that I've ever been to, and I imagine that's the same for a lot of supporters who were there yesterday. It's hard to put the emotions into words, really, because it feels as though this has been building. I think we'd all say, you know, as you mentioned in your intro, Joe, the performances we've had under Fozzie as we've been going on have been really encouraging and seem to have been built on game by game. And I don't know what it was. I thought this might be a little bit too soon. It felt like we were playing Swansea at the right time. It felt like we were a decent match for them. But I don't know, I went into it predicted a 2-2 draw, and it wouldn't have surprised me if it was narrow either way. So here we are, and it is narrow this way. So yeah, really pleased that it happened. Really pleased that it happened in the manner that it did as well. Obviously, with the goal for Morgan and the fact that it came from a set piece, which certainly has not happened often. It's another example of the work Fozzie's been doing to work on some of the weaknesses that we've had in, well, the first half of the season under Schumacher. And yeah, here we are. There's probably a lot of words that could describe the emotions that went through in the final whistle. Relief is one, ecstasy is another, but all in all, they put it together, and it's a struggle to find the right word simply because it has been 5,000 plus days since we experienced this, and I'm almost here sitting there not knowing exactly how I should feel. But it's certainly preferable to feel it that way than it is having gone to another away ground and not quite got the result in our favour. I much prefer this feeling, even though I can't particularly describe it very well.
It's a weird one, Sam, this, isn't it? Given that we had 31 wins last season, we've had 8 wins already this season, and yet we are struggling to put into words even just what this win means. Is it also fair to say that we've played a lot better in several away games this season, certainly from an attacking output, and not got a result? So it's rather pleasing that perhaps this was a little bit of a different style of performance, but we did get the result.
Yeah, definitely. I think the luck has definitely evened itself out. I'm not a believer in the theory that luck always evens itself out, because there's far too much randomness and statistical variation in life for that, but it certainly will very often come close to evening itself out. And I think that was a little bit of a readdressing of the scales after so many games where we've had awful luck with decisions, or with just the bounce of the ball going the wrong way, or the finishing's not quite been good enough. All of that got reversed. We didn't have a great deal of chances, in truth. We had a lot of opportunities that could have led to chances if the right decision was made. The Wayne moment late on, which he did brilliantly well to win the ball, in fairness to him, but then really should have squared it. Hardy had a moment, I think, where he should have squared it first half as well, but didn't do so. So we didn't have a lot of chances. We had a lot of chances that could have been chances, more so than actual clear sights of goal. And even the goal itself, I wouldn't really say it was a clear sight of goal. It was just a fantastic finish through a field of players. So our finishing was good. Certainly Whittaker's finishing was good for the goal. And Connor Hazard was absolutely fantastic at the other end. Two saves. Obviously the Patino one right at the end and the one first half. Looking back on the Patino one again, it's not quite as good a save as I thought it was at the time. I think it was, I was kind of watching through, fingers over my eyes, I think. Maybe didn't get the clearest view. But seeing it again, I think it's more of a bad finish than a good save, in truth, from Patino. But the one in the first half, and I can't remember which player it was from, someone will have to jump in with the name, but the one with his legs in the first half was an absolutely world-class save. The movement, the speed of motion for that was just wow. How quickly his brain moves and how quickly his body moves as well was brilliant. So Connor Hazard definitely won us that game, I think, more so than any other player. And I think he rightly got man of the match. Credit where it's due, really credit where it's due. I've had a little bit of a moan about him here and there, but I think he was absolutely fantastic yesterday, as he has been the last two or three games, really. I mean, not the best performance. Defensively, we kind of let them have maybe more space than Foster would have liked us to let them. At times, like certainly with the Paterno chance, he really should have been picked up, I think. But even aside from that, we did defend well at times as well. I'm not saying we defended badly, but room for improvement and some really good counter-attacks going forward. I think Foster getting us getting the work in the transitions is really paying off. He was considered as being an out-of-possession coach, a transitions-based coach as well. And I think we're really seeing the fruit of that as we are with attacking corners. I said with the two corners at Huddersfield where they sort of line up like a train, like the England squad do, but they all sort of line up in a row. That seemed to bring more results than anything else I've seen before. And obviously, following on from that, once again, the slightly different routine yesterday, great bit of interplay, Forshaw, Devine picks up a good space, then a simple pass back to Forshaw, who then lays it to Whittaker, who, you know, with that much time and space on the ball, Morgan Whittaker will find the goal as often as not. So, yeah, really happy and content with that. Like I say, best performance in the world, no, in truth, but certainly not a bad performance. Second half better than the first. Despite the goal coming in the first, I think the second half we were sharper and better. Maybe a draw. Swansea will feel a little bit disheartened. They might have thought a draw would have been a fair reflection. I would probably agree with them on that, but we got it done. And the emotion, the relief, the joy at the end was absolutely bloody incredible. And not a day that I'll forget easily. I might forget certain details of it easily, but the raw emotion is not something I'll forget easily. And I think that goes right into my top maybe 15, 20 games of my 22 years as a fan. It's right up there.
It's at this point I should stress to all listeners and viewers on YouTube that we do actively encourage that you drink responsibly. I also should say at this point, there's my Connor Hazard talking points that Sam's just covered, so I'll throw them away. Ben, let's get straight into it then, because there's only one moment really that we want to talk about in this game, and that was finally scoring from a set piece. It seems like an age since we last got a goal at a set piece, particularly a corner. A lot of praise from Ian Foster's gone to Kevin Nanskerville on this. He's been working hard with the players on set piece routines. If any man knows just how the Green Army feel about routines and things, it is probably Kevin Nanskerville. Talk us through it, mate, because in the end, it's turned out to be a work of art, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it was Whittaker himself said that they tried it a couple of times or looked to make it work in games previously. So it's obviously, you know, there's a bank of routines that they've got. I suspect this one now has come off, might go to the bottom of the pack again, and they'll maybe try another. But it was obviously something that they've identified that works. The little move, I think, they weren't sure it was going to come off. He doubled back to receive the dead ball. Played it out. Forshaw pings it in. It looks, I don't know if it was an awkward height, but it looked like not an easy ball to control. So to guide it into the corner with the skill that he did was a great finish. And yeah, like you say, the fact that we were able to create the space to create the opportunity was really welcome. It seemed, you know, on the face of it, it looks like a really easy, you know, sort of routine to cut, a simple routine. But if corner routines were that simple, then people would be coming up with clever little bit tricks and flicks like that all the time. So it's obviously something that they've identified, the way people mark them, the way people set up against them in games, and certain opportunities where you sort of, you'll see a certain setup. There will be the trigger to, okay, we can get this to work here. The movement, there's a little block off the ball as well. I think it's Gibson. It might not have been, but someone just sort of gave Whittaker the space to make his run, pinning his man back. We finally got it. Now, we wouldn't have, if it was so easy to pull off these little routines, we wouldn't have gone this long in the season without getting one, would we? So credit has to go to both the coaching staff and to the players for making it work. There was a lot of things that could have gone wrong with it, as has obviously happened three or four times previously when they've thought about bringing it off, either someone's got out to the ball, etc. So it was just wonderful that it fell to Morgan Whittaker. Obviously, I imagine that was part of the, you know, people wouldn't have been ignorant of the storyline surrounding the game, and sort of like the idea of, oh, if we can get this, you know, routine to Morgan, you know, brilliant. That'll create the perfect narrative. And, you know, it really did. It, you know, all those things coming off in the game made for a wonderful story, a wonderful event, you know, sort of as Ian Foster himself said, ticking off the first for himself, but also for, in many ways, for the club for a good period of time. So it was quite a fairy tale move, really. And it was just a shame in the sense that it came in the 18th minute. And, you know, as Sam was saying, we weren't necessarily brilliant, but I also thought Swansea were a lot better than I was expecting them to be. They're in a not a great run of form, and I thought they played pretty well and restricted what, you know, we could do. I don't think there were too many really awful performances from Argyle anywhere on the pitch, but, you know, Swansea seemed, you know, quite a good match for us around the pitch. And if it wasn't for Forshaw putting in sort of almost an immaculate performance, we might have been in more trouble than we were. Connor Hazard, obviously, with the man of the match performance, saving us. So it would have been lovely if that had come in the, say, the 78th minute rather than the 18th minute. It would have been even more euphoric because you've then got to sit through sort of 70 minutes of nail biting. But the fact that we were able to keep that clean sheet is another part, I think, something else that we haven't seen for a long, long time. Something else which was equally to be celebrated from that performance. So yeah, there's a lot. I enjoyed many aspects of that, from the resilience of the press to the resilience of the back five to Whittaker being the match winner on his old stomping ground and cementing his position as captain, sort of taking authority on the pitch. There was loads of things to be excited about and happy about. But you know, if that routine worked that well, one hopes that Nance has more in his quiver to bring out for games going forward. Obviously, you know, you imagine that the Foster has an influence too, and an input. But you know, we're in the top four still for open play goals scored. If we can start adding even a few from set pieces, all of a sudden we become much more threatening. Especially if we're going to be more defensive until we can get a a foundation in place defensively to be solid before we can start becoming more expansive. Then if we can add some set piece goals, if we're not going to be so free flowing as we have been earlier in the season, then that really helps us to become difficult to break down and gives us much more opportunity, especially on the road. If we're sitting in against teams on the road, so absorbing pressure, if we can't get them on the break, the opportunity to score through the odd free kick that we've won on the break or from the corner all of a sudden makes us much more dangerous on the road, which bodes well when we're going up against we've played a lot of the better teams away from home in the first half of the season, two thirds of the season. And we've now got a lot of the better teams coming to home park the last sort of, what was it, 17 games. So if, you know, home form, we can't rely on the ability to go away and maybe get a set piece goal, nick a draw, nick a win, even on the road against some of the teams down where we are in the league, could be a real boon.
Yeah, let's go into some of the thoughts that you guys sent in post-game. Ben, I'm not going to read your own out. That would be boosting your ego too much. Jay Holiday on Twitter said, what a fantastic result yesterday, and he had to be the main man, Morgan Whittaker, to score against his former team. Credit must also go to goalkeeper Connor Hazard. He was outstanding yesterday. He kept Argyle in the match with some excellent saves. Neil Hammercott says, Argyle come out on top in the rumble by the mumbles. Feel free to use. Neil, we have done. Massive win. Can't disagree with that. Zykaness says, rode our luck at times, but also could have made it safe with a bit of composure. Promising signs from Fozzie. We got a nice message from a Swansea fan, Shropshire and Midlands Jax. Said, well done on the win. Great support as well. Witt scoring was inevitable. Thought we deserved the win, let alone the point, but that's footy. All the best for the season. As Sam mentioned, I think certainly with the number of chances Swansea created, they can probably feel a little bit hard done by. But hey, we've been in that situation ourselves on the road. Quickly jumping across to Facebook, a couple of comments from there. Matthew Hugo says, Foster is an upgrade on Shuey. Well, we're a month in. Perhaps it's still a touch too early for those sorts of comments, but we'll come on to that in a bit. Michael Gorman says, well done to the team, the manager, team coaches, and our great supporters. First away win of many, I hope. If you chase the Bucks, you come unstuck. To whom this comment may apply, the grass is greener at home park. We are really stoked about that. And then we'll quickly delve into Pasotti Corner, our second trip to Pasotti, for their thoughts. Butternubs says Foreshore is exactly what this team needed. Green 1886 says pretty lackluster feel about it in the final third. Hardy strangely subdued. Miller had a good few chances, and Ben Wayne, the best of the lot, broke through, but totally lacked pace, composure, and ability. It's an interesting one. Just looks a little out of his depth. If Bunda is fit, he has to be the backup striker option. Saxman says, despite all the possession and slung over crosses, Swansea still often looked toothless, whereas Argyle were very threatening on the break. Even so, it took three remarkable saves by Hazard to preserve Argyle's one goal lead. Foreshore is absolutely class and has a brilliant knack of suddenly accelerating to close players down and challenge for the ball, often winning it. We are very fortunate to have him. Wayne continues to improve and made some good contributions and created his own chance, if only. Barley is also starting to find his feet. Goes on to say in brackets, literally no falling over today. And Morgs has got to be the most lethal finisher we have had in years. A lot to dissect from Pasotti Corner, Facebook and Twitter's thoughts. But I think, Sam, Ben and even Adam, you touched on it yourself. I'll come to you first, Adam. I want to designate a good number of minutes here. Obviously not the rest of the pod because we've got other things we need to talk about. But it would be wrong of us not to give Connor Hazard a good couple of minutes of our time, because there were moments in previous games under Foster where Hazard has been excellent. This is the best of the lot, isn't it?
It's right up there. It's really right up there. I think the main difference here, of course, from this performance to the other, is that it's a genuine match-winning display from a goalkeeper. And you can have keepers that have brilliant games, and you don't necessarily describe it as match-winning through no fault of their own. It's just the situation of the game and the way it's developed that has led to that. What Connor Hazard has done here is objectively won us at least 2 points and probably three. Now, we have certainly two that I remember. I know that conversation we've had with Charlie Patino and Jerry Yates in the first half, where are they the best finishers in the world? I mean, okay, they're not outstanding finishers. If they were, they'd have scored because they're in excellent positions. But it's not as if we can come away here and say that Swansea have actively missed those chances. They've got them on target and our goalkeeper has come up trumps for us. Now, I think it's easy to look at it and go, okay, yeah, well, maybe we got a little bit fortunate with the chances that we developed. And I can understand a lot of where it's coming from with Swansea. I recall one of the comments saying, you know, I thought we were good for the win, let them the draw. And I can understand the view. What I would say, you know, would have had exactly the same thoughts. If those stats from yesterday were in the other direction, we lost 1-0, we'd be gutted with how that went. I can completely see where they come. But even with that in mind, it's all well and good. You wouldn't necessarily say, oh, you're lucky that your centre-back performed brilliantly in stopping us getting chances, or, oh, you're lucky your midfielder was so good in breaking up play. But somehow, if your goalkeeper has an excellent game, it's fortunate. It's not. Hazard's had a fantastic game there. I mean, I know I've already touched on the debate we can have for the finishes, but regardless, he's closed down the space for both of those chances that I mentioned excellently, used his frame brilliantly, got himself in front of the ball and got the ball away from danger. So yeah, there's a lot to be said. I think if it's not the best game he's had for Argyle, then it's very close. And the only reason that it wouldn't be the best game is if he's had even better at, say, for example, Queen's Park Rangers away, securing that point and a few others. But securing 3 points on the road the way he did there, and let's not forget it, crucial moments as well. Yates just before halftime, if they go in level, it's a completely different game. Patino, I mean, obviously, right at the end, one of the final chances they had, and he gets it away. It's a struggle not to consider that a 10 out of 10 performance, simply because of how it ended and how it ended a run of 5,000 days and out of the way when in the Championship. And it would not have been possible without our goalkeeper on form. So call it lucky if you want. I don't think it's lucky. I think it's brilliant by him. And brilliant, I hate to go back number of days again, but brilliant actually by the scouting team to pick up on Hazard's abilities in the summer. I admit when he came in that I didn't necessarily doubt him. I doubted the need for him with Cooper and Burton already here. But clearly with the way that Cooper's not been available, you know, again, through no fault of his own, Hazard has stepped up And yesterday, yeah, go on. It's the best game he's had in an Argyle shirt, and I hope there's more to come.
I totally agree. I mean, I go back, the one that sticks in my mind is the Southampton game at the start of the season. I thought he pulled off two or three brilliant saves in that one. And I remember the Sky Sports commentators waxing lyrical about him. Ben, if you don't mind, I'm going to save Morgan Whittaker to Sam. We're going to give Whittaker more praise. God, who'd have thought it, eh? But Ben, I want to come to you about Adam Forshaw. So I wasn't totally sold on the fact that we needed an experienced head like the majority of the fan base thought we did. For a man in his 30s, in the perceived twilight of his career, I mean, it just doesn't stop running. I mean, yeah, that was a brilliant performance, wasn't it, from him yesterday as well?
Yeah, there's this strange perception that if someone's past 30, had an injury, that they're on the way to the knackers yard. But there's plenty of players that play at the very top level, up, you know, well into their late 30s. I know they're probably unique physical specimens, but if someone's looked after themselves and they've got the first yard in their head, which isn't to say he doesn't have physical speed, because I think he demonstrated that very well. I think that it's not necessarily the experience, it's the ability that he's got. You know, some of the people that have come in, the young players, they've got ability, but it needs to be honed, it needs to be touched up, it needs to be crafted. Forshaw's come in and he has the experience, but he has the ability. But the fact is, the ability, he's honed his craft over, you know, what, probably 14, 15, 16 years that he's been playing with other men, and he's played at a very high level already. So he's thrown into a position where he's done this all before, whereas the other guys coming in, they might end up with careers that have reached a higher zenith than Adam Forshaw's do, even, you know, someone like Darko Jamie playing in the same position. But right this minute, he's a better player because he's got the time in the legs, in the mind, so that he knows what he's doing in every situation. He's not having to think, the instinct's already been honed, and he's acting on, like I say, on instinct. And I think it's not necessarily just down to the experience, because someone could be experienced and be a selfish player. They can be, you know, not a leader. They can be not a team player. But it's the fact that he's exactly what the team needs in terms of the skill set and the ability, polished, ready to go in. You know, him and JB the team set up in slightly in the same formation, but they sort of, positioning was slightly different. It seemed to be like a 5-1-3-1 at times, that when the deeper we dropped became a 5-4-1. And JB and Forshaw seemed to alternate in being the deeper lying midfielder. But if you look at the stats, or even just with the eye, Forshaw, whether he was the one with the three behind Hardy that was pushing out and with the triggering the press, or he was the one behind mopping up, just in front of the back four, he did it immaculately. JB did both as well, but I don't think he put a foot wrong in many ways. You can't expect to win every tackle, you can't expect to win every duel or every 50-50, every aerial battle, but in terms of decision making, he just got everything completely right. And when you've got someone like that, you play a couple of games with them, you think, oh, I can trust this guy. Everybody else's nerves, everyone, the responsibility on everyone else's shoulders drops a little bit, and they think, look, if I'm in trouble, I can look for Adam and I can give him the ball and he'll know what to do. If I'm not sure whether I need to ping it long or I need to drop it back to this, you know, my nearest center back, I'll give it to Adam and then he'll know what to do. And he showed that composure so much in that game. And we talk about composure, just going back to Hazard, that, you know, the best thing about his performance yesterday was the things that we'd worried about his performance. So not coming and commanding the air, not coming out quickly off his line and making decisions, not distributing quickly, these things that we've seen as issues of as being causing problems for the team. He was able to do those, and that gave the defence so much more confidence in him. The defence seems so much more relaxed with Hazard's, and the last couple of games too, because it's noticeable. In the last game, he did the same. He was out quicker, he was up quicker, and when he was punching, he was decisive. He was punching it to space, etc. That continued even more so against Swansea. The defence was so much more relaxed, and so much more willing to trust him. Forshaw does that for the front two thirds of the team. I think everybody has a confidence that it will be all right, because he's going to be there to pick up pieces that we might drop. And that gave everybody else, I think, more freedom to be more adventurous and ambitious. You know, there was a lot of passes, a lot of misplaced passes at times, but they were ambitious passes. They were trying to break lines. They weren't just simple little knocks to the side. And that was because I think everyone had a confidence that we'll be all right. We can close the ball down. We can press quickly and recover the ball, because Forshaw especially was instilling that confidence in everybody. So that gave them the license to be able to try and play with a bit more freedom and a bit more excitement, rather than sort of shrinking within themselves. And that was probably key to us getting a result, because I think if we'd lost that confidence, if Forshaw wasn't as on it yesterday as he was, I do think we might have become a little more tentative. That would have invited Swansea on a little bit more. We'd have kept dropping. They did pose us problems. They did ask a lot of questions. I thought they had a pretty decent performance all over the pitch, Swansea. So I think Forshaw, you know, yes, Hazard was my man of the match, but it felt really hard to say that when the performance Forshaw put in, I thought, was probably key to both the forwards at the midfield and even linking with defence, to us being able to perform to the level that we did, which was able to keep to repel the Swans for that 70 minutes after we'd scored.
I noticed there were a couple of occasions as well when I was watching it back earlier on today. I noticed there was a couple of occasions where I think there was a time where Mumba overplayed and got caught and it went out for a corner, and there was an incident where JB gave the ball away and things, and Forshaw was straight there just having a chat with him. You know, he was showing that experience that he's built up over time. We can't go on any longer, Sam. We'll give him another couple of minutes, I suppose. He probably deserves it. Morgan Whittaker, take it away.
Yeah, it couldn't have been any more of a fairy tale, could it? Apart from Ash Benson's maybe the goal being a bit later in the game. and I think it's all the more fitting in the home game against Swansea. That was probably his weakest performance of the season, in truth. He didn't really get on the ball that much. He was quite wasteful when he did in that game. So I think maybe he will have had a bit of a, not so much a point to prove, because he's already proved the point of how good he's been the entire rest of the season. But I think there would have maybe been a little bit of an extra factor driving him to do even better against Swansea. And he absolutely did that with the goal, worked really hard. I think his off-the-ball work is actually getting better. I really do think that. I mean, however fantastic he's been on the ball, I think Foster has been teaching him a few things about pressing, closing off the lines of possession down the pitch. And I think there's been a couple of times where he did that to great effect. But of course, the goal, incredible moment. And I kind of have all the more respect for him for not absolutely going wild with his celebration, which I think he would have had every right to do, given how they treated him as a club. Not Russell Martin, more their board of directors recalling him, but he clearly didn't want to be. And obviously they're not in fact selling him as they planned to, which left him in a pretty crap situation for the second half of last season. And then they were obviously quite keen to get rid of him at that point, which is why he came to us for such a ludicrously low fee. So I kind of, you know, if I was him, if I'm a bit more petty than him, I wouldn't have minded giving it the old, you know, up yours to their director's box, but obviously he didn't do that. Measured celebration. And at the end as well, you know, tap the badge, give a little fist pump to the fans. Really good. And the best thing of all was that interview. And I think you said it, Joe, on a pod a few weeks or months ago, that such an underrated factor in any workplace is if you're happy somewhere. If you're happy and your mental health's in the right place, that gets you to levels where you may never have thought you would have got to. And I think Morgan Whittaker, when he came back here, I don't think anybody, I don't think he, his family, any of the supporters, any of the management team would have predicted that he would be going into the run of games in February with 17 goals and 6 assists in all competitions. It is absolutely incredible. 16 league goals. He's now the joint top scorer in the Championship, I think, with Smodics of Blackburn. He's just incredible. And look, for all that he's said about he's happy here, he wants to stay, I think he still will probably go in the summer. And who could possibly begrudge that? Because I think if he carries on playing even close to this level between now and May, the doors that level will open up for him in the summer are huge. Could be another Lazio level club, but maybe in England, could be a club like Tottenham or somebody of that level maybe could even go in for him. Certainly if he carries on improving off the ball, I don't see why he couldn't get to that level. Just really great moment. The love of the players all shoved him forward to receive the adulation of the fans at the end was incredible. And I think I almost, if he keeps us up, comfortably, which I think will happen. I almost feel that I almost would be very, very much ready for him to go at that point. And I think that would just be such a perfect fairy tale ending, and almost sort of wanting him to go on to the best things he's capable of, and obviously the very large amount of money that we get for him to go back into the club. Obviously, look, if he said, look, Simon, Andrew, I actually really, really want to stay, never mind Tottenham, I want to stay with the Green Army for another full season. You know, I think he's mad, but it would be brilliant. And if that does happen, then maybe he will end up staying. But we've got him for this second half of the season, no matter what. And yeah, just incredible. I think there's every chance he becomes the outright top scorer in the league. Maybe even, I think we've got to be now looking at, like, we know, let's be honest, failing, like, I think even if he, God forbid, did his cruciates, he'd probably be our player of the season now, because it was 1 year ago today that Cooper did his injury and he's still our player of the season. So I think whatever happens, he's pretty much got Argyle player of the season nailed on. I think he's got to be in contention for player of the season for the whole bloody league. I really do. How well he's doing. Like I say, those numbers are just absolutely incredible, and he's still getting better and better. And he'd have had another assist to his name if not for that official at Southampton.
I'm not going to repeat what you just said, because I don't want to tempt fate, but if what you suggest could happen in coming weeks about Morgan Whittaker and his fitness, I will send a witch doctor round to your house, Mr. Down. I think it's a good point you make about Whittaker's happiness, and he highlighted it himself in his interview. And look, I said it at the time, and I firmly believe it, that, you know, it's the same as anybody else in any walk of life. If you're happy in your job, you can perform to the best of your ability. You can perform to your maximum potential. And for whatever reason, wherever Morgan's been before, perhaps he hasn't had that level of happiness. And for him and his partner right now at Plymouth Argyle, they have that level of happiness. They have that they have that security. They have that comfortable living that they're going through. And look, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I hear from Whittaker in interviews and things, the more and more I actually believe that he might be with us beyond the summer transfer window, just because he has found a home, and that is more important to him than anything at the moment. And long may that continue. And look, if it is just another couple of months, then let's sure as heck enjoy every moment of it. And I think we said it on the deadline day stream, didn't we? That there's nothing more we want than Morgan to go out on national television on Tuesday night and show everyone just what he's capable of, and completely run the show in that cup replay, which we'll be previewing shortly. So on to questions. Adam, I'll come to you first. This is from Lee Smith on Twitter. He says, now we've started to win away, just how much danger is the rest of the championship in, and who are our main playoff rivals? Seriously though, first away win, first back-to-back championship wins, unbeaten in the league and cup in 2024, just what's changed?
Yeah, it almost feels like something's different behind the scenes, right, from where we were at the end of the last year. I can't put my finger on it. I know there's a debate to be had, and it's far too soon to get a definitive answer to the debate on whether we've upgraded on Stephen Schumacher by bringing Ian Foster into the club, but he could hardly have made a better start. I mean, to be unbeaten in, you know, a month into his role, having only had two home games, one of which was, you know, a day after he joined, you know, it's a really encouraging run of results. And I think
He's had three really tricky opponents for his league games as well, hasn't he? He's had tall, physical, robust Huddersfield and Cardiff, and then he's gone to a different kettle of fish in Swansea, who are in transition, trying to play a certain brand which is polar opposite to the previous two clubs that he's played in the league.
It's ultimately needed quite a lot of thinking on his feet in those games to combat different styles of play. Now, Huddersfield and Cardiff, I think Huddersfield in particular, if we were to play that game under Schumacher, I'm 90% sure we lose it. It's the sort of opposition that just absolutely wore our kryptonite for, you know, it's not even a dig at Shuey. It's been our kryptonite actually for a very long time. I go back to the days in the lower leagues when we'd face the likes of Gareth Ainsworth, Wickham Wanderers. We just could not. They had the mockers over us for years and years, that sort of side. So that in what was his first league game, and having had a week to get prepared was a really, it wasn't the most exciting game, but it was a really encouraging start that we didn't get turned over by a side who probably would 9 times out of 10 before he joined. Cardiff obviously were a bit of a special case with their injury absentees going into that game, but you again can only beat what's in front of you. We absolutely did beat what was in front of us and deserved to win on that occasion. I think we're almost overlooking, touching on those league games, yeah, absolutely, we're almost overlooking Leeds as well, and the way that they are a side who, particularly at home, on their day can steamroller most teams, if not all teams in this league. And yeah, okay, maybe they weren't at their best, but the way we played in the second half, and I think particularly the way that we made use of substitutions in that game with Butcher and Bundu coming on and changing the game, for the want of a better way of putting it, that was arguably one of the most encouraging things of Foster's month so far. Because when I think of Stephen Schumacher's strengths, I think above all else, at Argyle, he was an outstanding in-game tactician. The amount of goals we scored from substitutes, the amount of times he changed the shape and changed the direction of the game was, it was tremendous. The amount, not only the amount of times he did it, but the quality turn that we had when he turned to his bench. I'm thinking of a number of examples of points picked up from losing positions. And that is the thing I thought we'd lose the most from Schumacher go. And I think, based on everything that we've read before Foster arrived and everything that we've seen in the month, we're pretty confident that coaching is a major strength of his in the way he gets his teams to play and the way he improves players. But I didn't know, and that's not to say I thought it would be bad, I just didn't know how good he would be with his in-game management, how he'd make those tweaks in order to get us ahead in games where we perhaps weren't in the past. And the fact that he did that at Leeds, the fact that he made two changes that immediately came in and changed the game in our favour and got us that equaliser at what is a difficult place to go, that is what encourages me. So I know that's a slight tangent and a bit long-winded, but in terms of the question as to what exactly has changed, I mean, we've got a fantastic coach in, and time may suggest that losing Stephen Schumacher might be the biggest blessing this club's had.
And if I quickly might just jump in, like Sam was talking about Occam's razor, the other podcast, and the simplest answer often being the truest or most likely. Are you more likely to attract the best or a better candidate of head coach / manager when you're in League Two, League One, or in the Championship? Logic dictates you'll attract a better candidate of manager the higher you are. And Stephen Schumacher joined us, League Two, took over, higher division, and he proved to be good. But and sometimes we feel the better the devil you know. But on paper, if you were to sort of suggest there was a vacancy at a League One club and a Championship club, which one's going to get the better manager? You'd think the Championship club would attract the better manager. So I think, although it is early days, as Adam suggested, on top of all the traits he brought with him, his ability to demonstrate what he's done in game, that he, we haven't seen a drop off anywhere in the coaching regime, it seems, with the new manager, is really impressive. And I think, we can start to be quite optimistic that the club have upgraded.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I hear a lot of what you're both saying, and I think I agree. I would just say it is still only 1 month. And whilst I get what Joe's saying, that Huddersfield, Cardiff and Swansea are in their own way all difficult games, you'd sure as heck rather have those three than, Leicester, Southampton, Coventry, for sure. So I would just a little bit, you know, as Foster would say, calm down a little bit. But, you know, yes, it's looking very, very good, but we've not yet had that real tough run of games. When we do have a little wobble, how we respond will be a big one. Yeah, I think my gut feeling at this point is he is an upgrade, but, you know, very, very early.
Am I hearing this right, that Sam Down is being the rational one out of the panel?
That might be happening, yeah.
Sam being negative. Sam being negative, never.
No, I honestly know it could I know you're joking, but I know it could be construed as negative, but I don't know. I just feel there is a very, very long way to go. This is the guy who, you know, Schumacher, who, you know, for all our justified anger over the way he left and for all the, at times, naivety he's shown this season, this is still the guy who got us probably our best season in the club's history on a mid-table budget. So to be an upgrade on Stephen Schumacher for us, never mind how he's doing at Stoke, to be an upgrade on Stephen Schumacher for us would be a very, very difficult task indeed. That's not to say it's impossible, but he's got a long way to go. That's all I'm saying.
I'm gonna need a lie down after this podcast. After that is for sure. I was actually just doing a bit of digging while we were talking there about Fozzie and his reign so far and things. And actually, since Swansea beat us all the way back earlier in the season, only four teams have beaten us since Swansea beat us back in October, and those four teams are Leicester, Southampton. No, five teams, isn't it? Sorry, my maths has always been poor. Leicester, Southampton, Leeds, Ipswich. So that's the top four. And Coventry City, who are one of the most informed teams in the Championship right now. So, yes, whilst the last month has been really good and we are making progress, I think we can all agree that we're making progress. Actually, in the bigger picture, although there's a lot of draws thrown in there, our form actually isn't dreadful. And we are probably just about where we deserve to be, in my opinion, in that midfield battle in the Championship. I think that's just about right for me on how we're performing. Ben, come to you next for the next question. It's from Harry Water on Twitter, who says, "Sometimes I feel like we are screaming out for a striker, and if Hardy was to get injured again, what would we do? I know we have Bundu, but doesn't look like he's in Foster's plans, and I know he's injury prone." Of course, we should just mention Bundu did miss this game with a calf injury, isn't it? It looks like it might be a couple of games out for him. Just how big a problem is this? Because Wayne had the perfect chance yesterday to come in and just silence a few of the doubters. And to be fair, it was a good bit of defensive play, I thought, by the Swansea defender, just to put him off enough. But it is a worry, isn't it? If something were to happen to Hardy, options are limited.
Yeah, and there doesn't really need much discussion. We are stuck if he gets injured. And as I think I went on at length about in the deadline day, we don't have someone who plays his role in this team in the squad. You know, we've got players like Ben Wayne and Freddie Osaka who aren't the same profile. You know, one's been playing professional football a while, one's a young, raw talent, but they don't play the same way he does, with the same intelligence, making the same sort of runs. But also, the thing that Hardy does, he combines that with the aerial ability. He's not brilliant, but he's certainly better than Osaka and Wayne in the air, and better than Bundu. Bundu, I think, I'd like to think, you know, ask you guys your opinion, but I think he's got incredible skills. I think he's, compared to Wayne, I think he's definitely got the better touch, better composure on the ball, and much better physical strength. Again, Wayne was on the floor quite a bit in the afternoon yesterday when he was on, just not got the physicality to hold the ball up. And so, yeah, we don't have anyone if Hardy goes out injured, to play that role. And as I suggested, we might need a plan B if that's to be the case. I know a lot of people have been a little bit annoyed the club hasn't brought anyone in, but it's really hard to find. The ideal candidate would have been a loan, because we don't have lots of money to go out and buy someone, and strikers are like hen's teeth at the minute. But no one, that would mean benching Hardy, because we'd have to bring in a loan and play him. No one's going to send us a striker to sit on the bench and come on and play 15, 20, 25 minutes each game, they're going to want to send us a striker to play. And that's, you know, there's no chance we're going to bench Hardy. So that's going to be off the table. And then it's like, where do we get a striker who we can pay the wages of and we can pay the transfer fee from? Anybody who's approaching the end of their contract is being circled like a vulture. And we've seen a few sort of moves in the window to other championship clubs. You know, Kiefer Moore, there's been rumoured to be quite a lot of money involved in that deal. What Ipswich are paying for that, I don't think Argyle would have been able to offer. There was talk, you know, Graham was leading us on with the hope that we might be bringing in Aziz from Reading, and for whatever reason that might well have been happening, but didn't get over the line for whatever reason, or, you know, it might not have got very far. We don't really know the details of that, but that would have been the sort of market we'd have been looking at. We've been looking to try and find a cut price option, because you don't find a championship able striker who can both run behind the lines and, you know, do a decent job of hold up play just laying around places. That, you know, they are incredibly rare and prized assets, more than anything else, putting the ball in the back of the net. We're talking about Hazard winning us 3 points. Well, it wouldn't have been 3 points if Whittaker hadn't put the ball in the net. You know, we might have saved it. He might have won us a point, but the three came because we got the goal. And so putting the ball in the net is always the most valuable. Since they changed it to 3 points for a win, putting the ball in the net is the most valuable commodity in football. But given the situation we are in as a club and in this window, what we need from our striker, there wasn't much. You know, the club probably did everything they could. We don't know what foreign markets, etc., they were looking in. I just don't think there was anything there. I think the club, if they felt they could bring someone in who was an upgrade on Wayne, they would have. But there's no point talking anymore about can we cope without Hardy? What can we do without? I think we'd need a change of style. I don't think Ben Wayne can come in and replace Hardy for 90 minutes each game and us still perform to the level that we seem to be or have been for these early few games. I think there would need to be a sort of rethink on how we attack and how we set up to a degree. And I, you know, unless anyone else disagrees with that significantly, I think most of the fan base see it that way. You know, we're all just holding our breath, hoping that Hardy can get through at least a good run of games, put 6-9 points on the board. And then, you know, from a selfish point of view, if he did get injured, at least you'd think we could limp over the line. But yeah, I think that's the one area everybody, as much as we're confident about a lot of things going into these last 16, 17 games, that's the area I think we're all really worried. You know, that's the bit that could go wrong and throw the train off the tracks.
Let's not forget, and in theory, I do entirely agree with what you're saying, and I know I'm going to jinx this now even worse than I jinxed the previous bit, but let's not forget, Ryan Hardy's sort of already had his share of bad injury luck this season, hasn't he? He had the muscle injury in the Ipswich game. He had the head injury in the Rotherham game. Yeah, I've said it now, haven't I? But I almost feel he's had his share of bad injury luck. Okay, let me say it another way. When he did then go out of the team, certainly in that first little run, we were still capable of winning games without him. We won the Sunderland and Stoke games.
The difference is, back then, that he facilitated the tens and the wide men. He didn't necessarily, he wasn't the integral part of the team, whereas now he's the key to the press. And he's also asked to do two roles in the team, which is run behind and also be the outlet to bring the team up the pitch. So, yes, true. We were able to play with Wayne as a, I don't call him a placeholder, that's disrespectful. He did, you know, he performed well. He's got a goal against Leeds, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a different role that he's got to play in this system. I'll let you carry on. But I think comparing that period of injury and if he were to go out under Foster would create a very different problem.
I completely get that. I don't think you're wrong. But what I will say is, for all that we sort of had a bit of a moan and groan at Ben Wayne for that chance when he drew the defender out as if he was going to spare it and then just shot anyway, bit of a head loss moment. But how well did he do to harry that defender down and win the ball in the first place for that phase of play? So maybe, just maybe, we know Foster is great on the training ground. Maybe he is coaching Wayne into learning that off the ball, out of possession stuff a little bit better. And maybe if he is called upon to start a game or two, and let's hope it would only be a game or two, then he can develop in that. And I just think that, you know what, maybe I'm missing something with Wayne. I very much shared your view on doubting him, and maybe even been more doubtful than you at times. But maybe I'm missing something on him. And maybe if Foster sees it, then you know, as much as I like to have my own opinions on it, maybe I should defer to his judgment, because clearly, you know, he's not afraid to move players on. Gillespie, Butcher have been moved on, haven't they? Warrington sent back to Everton. So he's not afraid to dispense. Tyreek Wright, of course, he's not afraid to dispense with players he doesn't feel are part of the system. So maybe he's just seen something with Wayne that he thinks, you know what, I can work with, I can mould, and maybe he will come good.
We obviously hope that Sam's not jinxed everything and that Hardy can continue to have his decent run of games from now until the end of the season. If by any reason that's not the case, then I think one thing we've learned about Foster is that he's adaptable. And I know at the moment Hardy brings a lot more to our style of play under Foster than he did certainly in the first half of the season under Schumacher, when the goals weren't necessarily quite so reliant on the centre forward, as it were, and the way he brings the players into play. I just think I look at where we are now and say, okay, yeah, the transfer window, the one disappointment you can have is not bringing in the striker. But at the same time, that is the argument of saying, well, that if Hardy gets injured, we're going to have that issue. Truth be told, any first teamer gets injured in any position, you're naturally going to struggle. It's not as if we're talking about, you're going to have 10 or so backups in a certain position. It's just not possible for a team on our budget. So, of course, I hope Hardy remains fit. And, of course, I hope he keeps being integral to how we play. But I wouldn't be as concerned if he's not, simply because I trust the adaptability and I accept that it isn't necessarily possible to just bring another Ryan Hardy into the club when you've got players that good. I guess that's, you know, a pitfall of having players that good, that improving on them or getting their sufficient backup is tricky. But you'd rather have it this way round than not have that option at all.
Yeah, and I would certainly be excited to see Mustafa Bundu get more time, even if it was through unfortunate circumstances, because I think he's got a real mercurial ability and could become develop into a real quality player for us. So,
I was just going to say, Ben, I think to be fair, we've got a lot of games coming up, and particularly now that Sheffield Wednesday game at the start of March has been brought forward another day. If we do win tomorrow night, then what is it? It's 11 in 32, isn't it? So I think it's safe to say that between now and the middle of March, not May, I don't know if I said May, I meant March. So there will be plenty of rotation. I'm wary that we're coming up to the hour mark on tonight's episode, and we do still have to talk about Leeds on Tuesday night or tomorrow night as you're listening, or this evening if you've completely missed Monday. So three questions, 1, 2, 3, one each. Rattle them off. And this is a question on Facebook from Adam Wheeler, who says, how significant has the impact of the new arrivals been towards Foster's successes in the improvement of building team performances and achieving our first away win?
I mean, any manager that can bring in their own players, it naturally helps. And I think it goes back to what's been discussed a lot, both on this, both on our written content, both in terms of our social media output, is we're looking at it and going, are the players he's brought in able to resolve specific problems that we had before they arrived? So I'm looking at things like set piece goals as an obvious example. I'm looking at aerial duels, an obvious example, and why we've brought in 2 6-foot-5 players in a week. And I'm looking at a lack of experience in the middle. Hello, Adam Forshaw. It's lovely to have you. You know, they've obviously had a huge effect, and it's exactly what we would have hoped for and needed. I think Schumacher leaving before Christmas felt like it was the worst possible time, but actually, in a way, I'm glad it wasn't another month in the future, because I wouldn't have wanted Foster to come in at the end of the transfer window and have us panicking and thinking, how exactly are we going to fit these players that are already here into his team? You know, we wouldn't have had long at all to get everything sorted and get him the players that we required. So yeah, I think they've had a significant impact, amongst other things. There's Fozzie's coaching method as well for the players that are currently here have obviously helped them along too. But they've helped in a way that I think was well planned, and in a way that the club have clearly targeted these players for specific issues that have cropped up. And right now, at least, and again, we go for the age-old thing of it's still very early in his reign, but right now, it's all working out and it's all come together. So yeah, I know we've had the debate and discussion about the transfer market and what we could have done, but the players that we have brought in, as it stands, look like they fit brilliantly. And hopefully we're going to see that more, particularly with this long run of games to come.
Yeah, that's fairly succinct and to the point. So we'll come to you, Sam, for the next one. But it's an interesting one, and it perhaps needs a bit longer on a future pod if we need to talk about it again. It's from at Hainsey16, who's got their name as Argyle Sarcasm, which sort of lends itself to you may know what sort of questions coming. What's wrong with Barley Mumba, they ask. We talk about Whittaker as a steal, but have Norwich picked our pockets? It seems to be a very taboo subject. I'm not sure Norwich have picked our pockets, per se. I think Mumba's had some very good games this season. And I'm not totally sure there's anything wrong with him at the moment, is there? He's performing to a decent level.
He is performing to a decent level. I think as somebody who was kind of on this boat of Mumba could be doing a little bit better earlier in the season, I think some people have now gone too far the other way to people saying that he's playing badly or he's not worth a million. And I think that's so far off it. I think that there's so much he does well that's sort of quiet, understated, that doesn't really steal the headlines, but is massively advantageous to us. Certainly in a style of football, it's maybe a bit more territorial than possession-based. Obviously, you know, we try and be attacking, but it's not, certainly maybe under Foster, so much tiki-taka. It's not the slow pass build-up. A player who can just get the ball up the pitch is really, really welcome. And I think his dribbling, the kind of ground covered with the ball. Again, Ben, you're the stats guy, and I'm sure you'll back me up on this in the stats, so I can't put anything specific. In terms of ball movement, getting the ball from one zone of the pitch to another, he's got to be one of our best players, if not our most important. Bally Mumba reminds me of a player who I never thought I'd say he reminded me of after the last season. They seemed two very different types of player. And in a way, they are still two very different types of player, but similar in one key way. That player is Danny Mayer. Hear me out. Danny Mayer was brought in as his big headline marquee signing, and he didn't really get the goals or assist contribution that status warranted. But what he did do throughout his entirety of his 4 years was be a good player in getting the ball up the pitch, in gaining ground, in gaining us that 5-10 yards to get into a more dangerous position. Even if he didn't get the assist or the goal, he would so often be involved in the move that led to the assist. And I think that's also very much true of Bally Mumba. Last season, he was very different. Last season, he was more of a headline grabber. He was about the goals, the assists, the amazing moments, the wonder goals. And he came into that Huddersfield, that first game of the season, I think everybody thought, same again, was going to happen. He was just going to be another moments player, another, you know, star player. But actually what's happened is he's knuckled down. Yes, we all would have liked to see him get more goals and assists, but he's become a really solid under-the-radar player in territorial games and in progressing the ball up the pitch. And I think he's had an underratedly good season due to that, which is why I think as much as last season has seemed diametrically opposite to Mayer, Mayer was the quiet, understated, and Mumba was the big vibes guy. Now Mumba's stepped into the role of being the quiet and understated, but still a good player for us, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And I think we've also got to remember in the last couple of games, Bally Mumba's now switched to the right side. And I think there would be a weird turn of events, I think, looking at how Foster's setting the team up if Mumba ever plays on the left again. It seems like he's got him set as a right back now. So, Ben, come to you quickly. Last question, sort of covering yesterday's game and broader topics. Then we'll get straight into Leeds. It's from Jason on Twitter, who says, we've already touched on Hazard, but it's just one that I think we just need to touch on again. Can anyone name many better keepers than Hazard in the Championship? We need to stop comparing him to Cooper and start realising he's a very competent keeper at Championship level. Like all, they have strengths and weaknesses. It's a fair point, isn't it? He's a good keeper in his own right.
Absolutely, and I can answer that in about 30 seconds. So I just want to back Sam's point up on the right there. Mumba's interplay with Whittaker looks absolutely frightening in the few games that he's been there with him. They're both intelligent. They both understand each other. And he saved a certain goal or looked a certain goal yesterday with a great dive in tackle. And I think at least two other occasions this season he's done the same. His defensive contribution goes largely unnoticed because I think he will sometimes overplay and lose the ball. that gets focused on, but he does a brilliant job defensively. Connor Hazard is one of the best keepers in the Championship and can walk into a lot of teams. The stats show that. And I think a lot of the problems that have been picked up on his game are specific weaknesses not related to the main parts of a goalkeeper's job. And he's vastly improved on those in recent weeks. He's always been a very competent shot stopper here. The stats will show that he's one of the best shot stoppers in the Championship, regardless of the other flaws that have been present in his game. When he first came in, he very quickly improved in lots of areas. And I think he's got a lot of unfair criticism when at the start of the season, once he sort of developed his distribution, he was obviously being asked to do things he wasn't particularly comfortable with by Schumacher. And yet he worked within that system and did his best. When he came back in after Cooper went out again, he seemed to have a drop in confidence and his aerial control, his willingness to come out, take a ball, punch a ball, his willingness to come off the line and make a decision seemed quite reticent at times. And that was a worry. That seems to all have improved massively in the last few weeks. And I think that not only is he an excellent keeper who could walk into a lot of teams in the Championship, but he's also a really good teammate. And I think the picture that's been doing the rounds of Lewis Gibson embracing him demonstrates that he's really well liked. He's wanted to be a success within the team. He's always sort of, you know, he's never on his own. He seems to be a real important member of the group. It seems to be part of the good guys policy of the recruitment in recent months and years. And I think he's massively underrated. And I think that certain performances, certainly if he continues to do the all-round game as well as he has the last two games, he'll start looking like an absolute steal. And he's a player that we might be looking, you know, people have talked about Cooper going for big money. It might be if he plays as well as he has the last two games for the rest of the season, he's someone we're really desperately trying to hold on to or talking about making a seven-figure sale on come the summer. I really think he can be that good if his all-round game continues to be as impressive as it was against Leeds and against Swansea yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And now we're not going to try and fool you all by pretending that we've recorded this preview podcast differently. We're just going to add it on to tonight's episode because, let's be fair, by the time this gets out, it'll basically be kickoff. And Mark Chapman will have handed over to Jonathan Pearce or somebody on commentary on BBC One. So, as we all know, Tuesday night, we are in FA Cup fourth round replay action at Home Park against Leeds United. We're going to become very friendly with our friends up the road in Yorkshire with three games in as many days. Following the 1-1 draw at Elland Road, we get to do it all again. The tie will be decided on the night. And of course, a place at either Stamford Bridge against Chelsea or Aston Villa at Villa Park awaits on Wednesday, the 28th of February, I think it is. And that game would be broadcast live on ITV4, should we get there. I suppose the big question for the three of you, open forum, really, on this game, not what do we feel about it, not, you know, how's it going to go? Who the bloody hell's starting in midfield?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, obviously, with Houghton being injured and JB being barred from playing and Forshaw still being cup tied and Butcher having been sold, the only two, he can play there. So the only two recognised central midfielders at the club in terms of that being their first or second position are Caleb Roberts and Adam Randall. Do we start Roberts again? Maybe. I've got a feeling that he's going to not do that. Not that I think Roberts was bad, but I think there was a couple of times where he just didn't look quite up to the pace of it and a couple of mistakes on the ball. And I think that there is going to be an aspect of player protection as well from Foster. I think that as tenacious as he was and that kind of thing, I think that he's not going to want to give him too much action too soon. I think he's going to want to spend some time with him on the training field and maybe work on where he needs to build up his skill set a little. I could be wrong, and maybe he will play him and maybe he'll do fantastically, but I've got a feeling that he's given him that moment at Elland Road, which is great for his know-how and his experience. I don't think he's going to play him for the replay. I could be wrong. I think it will be
Foster does have a bit of a knack for the unexpected. It could be Joe Edwards, but he's not played central midfield since probably before COVID was a thing, has he, for us? Not for a very long time. I think he's going to go for Adam Randall and Julio Pleguezuelo in midfield, because we know Plegy can play midfield. He has played there at his previous clubs. That was what was reported to us on the arrival pod and in written literature as well. He's not someone who's played a lot of minutes in recent weeks, but I think that, and I think with the back three being as they are, he's not going to get a lot of minutes in the back three, barring an injury. So I think he's going to put Plegy in the central midfield. I just think against such a good team as Leeds, his sort of calmness on the ball, his good, for all that we can sometimes have a bit of a moan about his defending, his good passing ability could be really useful in midfield against Leeds. So I think he's going to go for Randall and Plegy as the midfield too.
I think that the two aspects that he desires above all else in his midfield is size and dynamism. I don't think we have any big midfielders left. So Pleguezuelo is a good shout for coming in just to add that sort of size. But I don't know if he's as dynamic. I mean, he's reasonably fast, but I think that gives Caleb Roberts actually a pretty good shout, because he is nippy, if nothing else, and to get about and sort of nip at people's heels and harry people, that's something I could see him doing quite well. You know, we've said the club is taking the FA Cup reasonably seriously, not super seriously, but they've not just put out a really weakened team. They're quite glad to have won the replay. So I don't think Caleb Roberts playing was just a token. I think that there was something there that the manager saw. And if he's had extra time to work with him, I don't see why he might not have got him to that state where he's got a few more principles into him that he feels he can trust him to go out again and do the same, especially as he's played against the team and he's got a little bit of familiarity with those who might come out on the pitch. But I've been even more bemused by Foster's team selections than by most of Schumacher's, to be honest. So I wouldn't like to hazard a guess. It then becomes a question of if you don't play Roberts and you play someone like Randall, who do you play in left? Are you relying on Callum Wright again to play the left forward? So that's the other thing that speaks in Caleb Roberts' favour, is he's not being removed from another position or having to then vacate a position where you need to fill that hole. So, yeah, I mean, Caleb Roberts might get a game. I can see every reason why it might happen. I would love to see him play and Isaka play on the left wing, but I don't see it happening. But that would be brilliant in the FA Cup on the telly for those two to get that sort of experience under their belt.
I think, yeah, I like the Plegy idea. Don't get me wrong. It's something I'd actually not considered coming into this, but I do think Roberts will get the nod. I think it's an easy one to get him up for, you know, local player. Let him know that people are going to tune in for EastEnders and they're going to be watching you instead, and get out there and perform on national television. You know, he's what more can you want? He wasn't a tokenistic choice away from home. I agree with you, Ben, on the reasons for getting him in and the quality he can bring. Okay, he didn't have the greatest game in the world, but it's a baptism of fire for sure. I suspect it will be the same way of thinking again, because whether you want to claim you're taking the FA Cup incredibly seriously, whether it's not in the priorities, this is a big game for Plymouth Argyle. When you consider the potential for a fifth round tie a ground that will get you a very, very decent helping of gate receipts no matter where you end up, when you consider the prize money for winning the fourth round and getting to the fifth round for the first time in, what was that, 17 years by my quick maths on that, it becomes significant. Add in the TV money, both for the replay and the prize money. Yeah, there's every reason to think this game could be worth, a victory here could be worth about £1 million. And when you consider that, I mean, okay, yeah, we're probably not going to go on and win the cup, but we could do with an extra £1 million in our back pocket, particularly coming into January. So I can't see any reason why he'd make a tokenistic selection. And I don't think Roberts is one. Yeah, now Sam's put that seed into my mind, I'd be quite curious and keen on the idea of Plegy coming in, but I suspect we'll see Roberts because he's been trusted in the past, and yeah, he'll be even more motivated this time around.
It's quite an interesting prospect, isn't it? The thought of Caleb Roberts and Freddie Isaka both starting the same game in the cup, obviously with Mustapha Bundu now out. It's a straight fight, really, isn't it? Between, unless we're changing system, between Freddie Isaka and Callum Wright. for that left wing spot. Just an open question before we do go on to actually talking about the game itself. Are we expecting Hardy to start this one? Just quick yes or no's, or do we think this could be rotated away?
I think he'll start. Hardy will start.
Yeah, agreed.
I just thought I'd throw it out there. So overall then, Leeds, Lord only knows what team Leeds are going to pick. Whichever team they pick, it will be incredibly strong. They will have stars all over the pitch, but this is on our patch, lads, isn't it? This is a real opportunity to make the last 16 of the FA Cup. Something that, as Adam alluded to, hasn't been said for quite a while. Can we go out and enjoy it? Or is there a real element of pressure and nervousness because of the carrot that's dangled in front of us and we're at home? We're expected to get a result.
Well, what I would say to that is we've still made a decent sum of money from this cup run. I know it seems weird, a cup run, where we could only have won one tie against Sutton, but I would still say it is a cup run because it's three games, one of which was at Elland Road, which was a real money spinner attendance-wise, and obviously won a lot of prize money and also the TV money in that as well. So I think even if we don't get it done on Tuesday, that's still going to be the best part of £1 million we'll have made from the cup run. Maybe not quite as much as £1 million, but the best part of £1 million. If we beat Leeds, then we're doubling that easily with the gate money from Stamford Bridge / Villa Park and with the TV money from ITV. So yes, it would be nice to double it, but it's not a catastrophe. If we don't, you know, the league is still most important. Eyes on the prize. We're nearly safe. We're nearly there, but we're not there yet. QPR are picking up a little. You know, I'm not really worried, but I've still got half an eye on it. If you're asking me, would you rather we win in the cup or win in the league game in a couple of weeks? It's the league game every day, you know, and twice on Sundays. So I still would rather. Obviously, it'd be great if we could do both. And obviously, I'm not going to turn down a win by any means. I'd love us to beat them in the cup game, but it's not the most important thing yet, I would say. So it would be great, but I think we can just go and enjoy it. Like I said, I think Leeds are a good team to watch play. I think their style contrasted with ours, both two very dynamic teams. It'll be a good game of football. I've got no doubt of that at all. I think we can enjoy it for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's much pressure on either team. Like, Leeds can say, oh, we'll concentrate on the league if they go out. And if we go out, well, we were just playing Leeds, who are, you know, favourites to go back up to the Premier League, perhaps shouldn't even have been relegated. So, you know, from a certain perspective. So, yeah, I think we can. I think it might be quite a free flow and entertaining game of football, to be honest.
Yeah, let's hope that Robert Jones of the Premier League and Michael Oliver's band of merry assistant referees let the game flow on Tuesday night and let the spectacle be a good one. Let's go around the group then. All three of you, score predictions for the... Because this is a preview pod, we've got to do score predictions. Aaron won't forgive me if we don't. So score predictions for Leeds United on Tuesday night.
One all, okay, I'm not going to call a winner.
You have to. That's the nature of a prediction, Ben.
Yeah, one all is a prediction. One all, and then I got a feeling there'll be an extra time winner, and I want to say Leeds, sadly, but that's the pessimist in me.
I think the good vibes are going to keep going a little bit longer. Yeah, I think Leeds are going to be more rotated than we are. I think they're going to give Somerville and Gray a rest, both coming back from injuries. Don't think James is back to fitness yet. They'll probably give Routier a rest as well. We're going to win, I think, 2-1 in normal time.
I'm going to say 1-1 after 90 minutes, 2-1 after full time, and our goal to bring about their Pizza Cup experience and win on penalties.
Good heavens above, that would be something to look forward to.
Do we think Shuey is the type of guy? Shuey, that's an incredible gaffe. Foster is the type of guy, but do we now think that Foster is the type of guy who would do a Louis van Gaal and would bring on Callum Burton for a shootout if it's level? No. I think he might.
I think he's the most no-nonsense kind of guy in that scenario. I think he's just like...
Yeah. I think Shuey would have done. It strikes me as the kind of thing Shuey and his big galaxy brain would have done. But I think maybe you're right. Maybe Foster's a bit more, you know, straight down the line. So maybe not.
There we have it then. A mix of predictions. For what it's worth, I do think that Leeds may well just nick this. I'm sorry to be the negative one. I'm more negative than Ben because I'm not totally convinced we'll get to extra time. But one thing I am sure about is that the 16,600, 700 or so, however many there are of us, inside Home Park on Tuesday night are going to make Home Park bounce on national television. This is a real opportunity to show the footballing world just how good a support the Green Army are. And there can't be any quiet period in this game. We need Home Park to be rocking from the very first whistle. Just a couple of bits before we close up. We haven't mentioned it before, I don't think, on the pod, but most of you will be aware that there is a crowdfunder going on for Argyle legend David Norris. Available. Obviously, David's going through some pretty tough times in his personal life at the moment. He's actually selling his League One title winning medal to fund a court case. Of course, those of you who weren't aware, there is a My Argyle Life with David Norris available on all your podcast platforms, where he recounts many, many good moments of his career, of which there were plenty. But if you did, or if you haven't already gone to the crowdfunder and you would like to pledge something, that's available at Devonport Dreams on X. Have the crowdfunder going. It's already surpassed their target and it's done incredibly well. The football family really has pulled together for Chuck in his time of need. Special congratulations to the Argyle women, who had a nail-biting 4-3 win over MK Dons today. You know, it's been a bit of an up-and-down season. Obviously, they had that great cup run, and results in the league have been a bit indifferent. But hopefully that result today will go a long way to ensuring their survival in their division. And last but not least, all that's left for me to say is we will be live on Wednesday night after the game, reviewing the Leeds FA Cup game. I think there's still a few details to be ironed out about how we're going live, whether or not we're going to go live on YouTube as we did on deadline day, or whether or not we're just going to do a live Twitter space. I think Aaron just needs to have a bit of a chat with those of us who are partaking and see what we find is easiest and will get us the best interaction. But do join us on Wednesday night. We will be live about 8 p.m.-ish as per the norm, dissecting everything about the FA Cup. And who knows, we may well in the background of our televisions have our potential opponents playing on ITV at the same time. But gents, unless there's anything else that you guys want to cover, I think we've just about covered everything Swansea and Leeds United ahead of the cup tie. It's been a really good fun to host the podcast the last two weekends, and of course throw in the deadline day special, which we must extend a huge thank you to everyone who got involved in the show on Thursday night. It was something that we thought about a couple of weeks ago. We thought it'd be a bit of fun. We didn't quite expect the interaction and the numbers that we pulled in on the show. We really are incredibly grateful. If you haven't seen it yet, you probably watched about 30 seconds, saw that we were all rambling about transfers that weren't going to happen, and you probably turned it off. It is worth it. There are quite a good few bits in there from across the evening. We were joined by some great guests. And at the end of the night, we just took the mick out of Sam Down, which is something that shouldn't be turned down as an opportunity.
And to the video, to the Sousa signing video.
Oh, I still can't get over it. I want to point out to all the very kind commenters, I can afford a chair. I just don't quite have room for one. Trust me, it would be, I'd be bumping into it, getting out of my bed. It wouldn't be any good there. But thank you for the kind thought.
So it was great fun, and we really are grateful for everyone who showed us support on Thursday night. And we will be planning future live episodes and things to get you guys more involved in the programme. But that is all for tonight, or this morning, or this afternoon, whenever it is you're listening. I'm off to bed. Some of us have some effects of the night before to wear off just a little bit more. So Ben, Sam, Adam, thank you for joining me. Enjoy the occasion on Tuesday night. They don't come around for, I know you shouldn't be teary-eyed about these sort of things, but games on BBC One in the FA Cup with a place in the last 16 don't come around very often. So go along to Home Park, enjoy it, make plenty of noise, get behind Fozzie and the boys, show Leeds what we're all about, show the country what we're all about. And who knows, a place in the last 16 is the prize. That's all for tonight. Enjoy the game. Enjoy your week. We'll be back on Wednesday night. Keep it Argo. Keep it green. And hey, the future is very bright. Cheers, guys.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.